Right, let's get cracking. Welcome. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Peter. I'm a partner in the employment team here at MPM Legal. We're a specialist employment law and business immigration practice. We're based in the south of England, but we work with clients who are all over the world. They have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK, and that's where we work together. I am delighted, as always, to be joined by my colleague, Adrienne. Good morning, Adrienne.
Good morning, everybody.
Just a few housekeeping matters before we get cracking. The session is being recorded, so you'll be able to come back and revisit it to your heart's content. The video will go on our website. The audio goes into our podcast, Employment Law 101, which is on Spotify. So please do check us out there if you haven't already. I mentioned at the start that we do use the Q&A function. Not sure how we'll go with questions today, just because it's a slightly different topic today. But by all means, put some questions down in the bottom. If we can answer them, we've got time to answer them, then we will do our best. Those of you that are familiar to joining these sessions know we do try and get through the questions. I think only we can see your questions. If you're using the chat function to speak to anybody else, then everybody can see what you're saying. So just bear that in mind. So what are we talking about today? I need to say everything we're going through today is as we understand it at today's date, of course, the 30th of November, 2023. I say that because some of you will be listening to this on Spotify at some point in the future. So hello to you. But bear in mind that things may have developed or changed from when this is being recorded. Right, today's session is a slight diversion from our current Employment 101 cost of living theme, which our current sessions have been on. And instead, we're having a look at the significant changes to holiday pay. And that's because they've only just been announced at the end of last month. I think it's fair to say that the law around holidays has been something of a complete complicated mishmash for quite a few years now. And that's because we've been working through mainly EU-derived rules, which have been overlaid by UK laws. Now, the problem is then compounded by the application of both European Court of Justice decisions and also Employment Tribunal, Employment Appeals Tribunal, Court of Appeal, the Supreme Court decisions here in the UK. What does that mean? Well, the snappily titled Retained EU Law Revocation and Reform Act 2023 is now on the statute books. And at the very end of October, the government published regulations and an explanatory note about what laws are going to change. And these are going to have effect, we think, from the 1st of January. What are the government doing? Well, essentially, all EU law and cases that the government doesn't want to keep are going to be wiped. And those rules that are retained are effectively being codified into the working time regulations. And it's those rules relating specifically to employment law that we're going to be running through this morning.
And it's been fun, hasn't it? I mean, looking at the published regulations, they are extremely technical. And, you know, whilst we could sit here, well, in theory, we could sit here and go through things regulation by regulation. That wouldn't really make for an interesting session. So what we're going to try and do is just focus on the headline points, which we hope are going to be of use to you at the coalface. Of course, if you would benefit from a super detailed analysis of what your company has in place at the moment and whether or not it will be compliant come 2024, then do let us know as we can help. So, but let's kick it off, starting with holiday and rolled up holiday pay. And this is specifically for those of your employees who work irregular hours and part year workers. So the draft regs set out a new system of holiday accrual for these types of workers. And the idea here is to address the difficulties caused by the Supreme Court's decision in a case called Harper Trust and Brazel. That was a case about a peripatetic teacher who only worked part of a year and made a complaint about holiday. It was the sort of perceived unfairness of part-year workers and some casual workers having a greater holiday entitlement than workers on more regular contracts proportionate to the amount of work done. So the terms irregular hours worker and part-year worker are now actually defined in the regulations, but they will generally include hours workers whose hours are irregular. So people like zero hours workers, some agency workers, where it's a bit ad hoc, where, you know, it will vary from week to week. And also workers who under their contract have periods in the year of at least 1 week where they do not work and they are not paid, such as hourly paid term time workers. Now, obviously, you've got people like teachers who don't work through, I would say, a significant part of the year. But that's because I'm jealous that my husband, a teacher, gets more holiday than me. But they're actually paid a regular salary throughout the year. So it's, you know, it's they are actually paid. So this is where there's a slight complication. So for leave years starting on or after the 1st of April 2024, so not when the regs come into force on the 1st of Jan, these workers' holiday entitlements will no longer be governed by what we call the normal holiday regulations, which are in 13 and 13A of the working time regs as they are at the moment. So regulations, just as a reminder, regulation 13 gives the right to 4 weeks holiday. 13A adds on the additional 1.6 weeks, so to give what we consider to be the normal 5.6 weeks of holiday. Those are two different parts to the regs. So instead, for this group of workers, their rights will instead derive from a totally new regulation, Regulation 15B. Now, if you're like me, when you're reading all this, trying to keep these numbers in your head, it's not that easy. So hopefully we'll try and simplify it. But so holiday for those workers, for the irregular hours workers, will be calculated in hours rather than weeks, and they will accrue on the last day of each pay period at the rate of 12.07% of their actual hours worked in that pay period. Now, some of you are going to recognise that 12.07% because it's what everybody used to do before it was ruled to be unlawful. So to that extent, I think there's a bit of a hurrah. That sounds a lot more sensible than what we've been grappling with since the Harper Trust case, which ruled that 12.07% was an unlawful calculation. So that's that. And then in terms of the averaging out, you have to average over a 52-week reference period, which is also how it is at the moment, to calculate the amount of holiday accrued during a period of sick leave or statutory leave, such as maternity leave. So I think it's fair to say that it's a return to what was the practical and commercial way of working out holiday for those people with a few little twiddles.
Yeah, and I think the important point to note here actually is that you've got these two separate schemes almost now, these two separate rules, depending on whether you're dealing with a regular, in inverted commas, worker, or whether you're dealing with somebody who's classed as an irregular hours worker or a part-year worker. Because like you said, we've got this sort of funny situation where Reg 13 says you've got 4 weeks of leave, and then Reg 13A says you've got 1.6 weeks of leave. And really, you know, everybody just talks about having 28 days holiday, 5.6 weeks. And you don't always, you know, really make that distinction. I mean, certainly if you're an employee, you're not going to be going around thinking about, well, now I'm taking my 4 weeks leave, now I'm taking my 1.6 weeks leave. It's just you're using your pot of 28 days. That distinction, though, doesn't exist under this new 15B. So basically, if you are the irregular hours worker, if you are a part-year worker, you can ignore the Reg 13 stuff, that distinction between 4 weeks and 1.6. Instead, you've got one single unified right. So what does that mean for you if you're an employer then and you're looking at paying holiday pay to these irregular hours and part-year workers? Well, you've basically got the choice of two different options. The first option is the harder option, I think. That's where you pay holiday pay when holiday is taken, and you run a calculation at the rate of a week's pay for each week of holiday, which, you know, when you say it out loud, it sounds pretty straightforward, but actually the devil's in the detail. And as Adrian, you'll know from various client queries we've had about what constitutes a week's pay, because it's not always so straightforward. A week's pay will, broadly speaking, be the average amount of weekly pay over the last 52 weeks, and that will include additional elements set out in a modified definition of a week's pay. So there's a modified definition of what calculates a week's pay, and we'll talk about that in a moment. A week's holiday, therefore, consists of the average number of hours worked in each week of the same period, And the output of all of that is basically you should get an hourly rate of holiday pay that reflects the average hourly rate of pay over the last year. And I think the intention here is that somebody isn't then disadvantaged by taking holiday. So by taking holiday, they're not going to be being paid less during that holiday period than if they were at work. And, you know, if you go back to the idea that holidays are a health and safety concept, it's all about keeping workers safe. That's why it's mandatory that workers take holiday and take a minimum amount. It figures that you don't want rules that disincentivize people from taking holiday because they feel they're going to miss out on salary. So that's option one, the more complicated one. Option two, I think, is the easier approach. And that's where you go down the rolled up holiday pay route. Now, we know from our advisory work that there are still quite a few companies out there that have always operated rolled up holiday pay. And they've just crossed their fingers and, you know, touched some wood and not faced any legal claims or liability in respect to it. However, technically, rolled up holiday pay isn't permitted. These new regulations help us there because now the UK government is able to legislate to override EU law that says rolled up holiday pay is unlawful. So that concept is going to go. Rolled up holiday pay will be permitted. There'll be a new regulation. Again, if you're a fan of numbers, want to write it down, it's 16A brackets 2. And what that says is that you can add an uplift of 12.07% to the worker's remuneration for work done in each pay period. So you just run a straightforward calculation of 12.07% to calculate the pay, the holiday pay amount. Now, that's a different calculation, isn't it, to option one? And it's a lot simpler, basically. And if you're taking that approach, you've obviously got to let those workers take their holiday. But if you're using rolled up holiday pay, you don't then pay a separate amount of holiday pay because it's already been rolled up within the pay that they've had already. So that makes it a bit easier as well. There'll be a 52-week averaging system to calculate the rolled up holiday pay for workers who are on sick leave or statutory leave. So bear that in mind as well. But I think option two is very much an easier system to work with than option one.
Yeah, certainly easier for payroll because you just get to the end of the month, work out the pay, apply 12.07% and bingo, that's your rolled up holiday pay. Okay, right. I'm going to talk about the definition of a week's pay for holiday pay purposes. This is, again, just sort of like wiping away all of the case law that we've talked about endlessly over the years. So you might have heard the Locke case, you might have heard the Bear Scotland case. All of this was talking about what should be included when you're talking about what is a week's pay. And these regulations, they set it out. So they codify what's been in the case law. So it doesn't mean we're going back to basic pay. It means quite the opposite. It means we are now required to include certain aspects into a week's pay. And as Peter said, it's meant to not disincentivize people from taking holiday. So what's it going to include? It's going to include all payments, including obviously basic salary, commission payments, payments that the regulations say is intrinsically linked to the performance of tasks that a worker has to carry out under their contract. So obviously, if you're in sales and you earn commission, the more you work, the more you get paid. That's linked to performance. There are going to be, I'm sure, quite a few questions around bonuses, whether bonus payments should be included, because if bonus is based on performance, then that is intrinsically linked to the performance of tasks and therefore should be included. Overtime, again, pay for people working needs to be included. So that just codifies what the current practice is. Then there's payments for professional or personal status that relates to length of service or seniority or professional qualifications. And I have to confess, it's not something that I've come across. And I said to Peter, I said, what is this? So we had a look, and there are various industries where people do get various uplifts. And I think one of the ones you found was like a senior GP allowance, for example, the doctors. But for the vast majority of you, that's probably not going to be something that applies. So when it comes to overtime payments, it's got to have been something that's been regularly paid to the worker in the 52 weeks preceding the calculation date. Now, I'm already hearing frantic typing as you go, what does regular mean? And again, you know, it's these types of concepts where you get the legislation and then it's like, well, what does that actually mean? What counts as a regular payment if somebody does overtime once a year, but religiously does it once a year? Does that count as a regular payment? So we just don't know the answer to that at the moment, but probably the sensible decision to take is that if you are paying overtime to staff on a, I was going to say regular basis because there is no other way of saying it, but if you are habitually paying it to them, there we go, it's a different word, then it's likely to be included in the calculation of a week's pay when you're paying holiday pay.
And also, you know, things like, is it mandatory overtime? Is it voluntary overtime? Is there any obligation on the company to offer voluntary, offer overtime? And if they do, is there an obligation on the employee to accept it? All of those things come into play potentially as well, don't they? But I mean, what's the downside of including everything? It's you're overpaying cost. Potentially. It's cost, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's always about cost, isn't it? So it's and it's knowing that it's not just the cost of paying the overtime at the time, but it's the knock-on effect that may well be something to be included in holiday pay. So so that amended definition of what's in pay will apply to all the Regulation 15B holidays. So that's the holiday paid to your irregular hours workers. So you have to calculate your 12.07% on the basis of all the pay that they've received. But it doesn't apply to the 1.6 weeks Regulation 13A holiday. So that's that extra slice of holiday, which will continue to be subject to the unamended definition of a week's pay that currently applies, which is your normal pay. In practice, though, I haven't come across many employers who differentiate between the two types of leave. But and when I've spoken to people about this and said, you know, you could differentiate, they all shake their heads and say their systems can't figure that out. So in practical terms, you're looking at applying that wider definition of pay probably to all annual leave entitlement.
Yeah, imagine the calculation, because if you're saying, well, we've got to take into account overtime payments, commission payments and everything, but only in respect of the 4 weeks, EU leave, let's call it that, but we don't have to apply it to the 1.6 weeks of UK leave under the working time regs. How on earth do you configure your system to determine what leave is taken when? Like, I think we've seen things in contracts that say the first 4 weeks of annual leave taken by you is your Reg 13. And then, you know, the next 8 days are not, but it just seems very
really muddled to me. Really muddled. Yeah. So, and in actual fact, as part of the consultation, they did look at just combining all of it together, but decided not to. So they're maintaining the distinction between the two. But in practical application, it's probably not that significant. I mean, I think the only times we've seen it is you often see if in contracts, if somebody's dismissed for gross misconduct, then they can be paid out for holidays, which is just their basic statutory holiday.
Yeah, and like pile-on provisions that talk about accrued holiday payments as well. So they're in contracts, doesn't it? But then, you know, some poor person's got to sit down and figure out what leave's been taken when and what the ultimate calculation is for that.
Yeah.
Carryover. Should we talk about carryover?
Carryover
of leave. That's one of those areas where, again, there's been like a whole host of European Court of Justice decisions in relation to the interpretation of carryover and what's permitted and what isn't. So the government are using these regulations as an opportunity to restate and codify those different cases. So we're talking specifically about carrying over leave from one holiday year into the next holiday year, of course.
It's not permitted except in certain situations, isn't it? That's basically the position we're in at the moment.
Absolutely. And again, I think a difference in treatment between the Reg 13 and the Reg 13A leave as well, if memory serves me right. But it's a bit of a mess. So what we can say about the new provisions is that your workers will have a right to carry over leave into another holiday year if any of the following things apply. So the first is, you know, something that we've always known about, really, if they can't take some or all of their leave because they've taken a period of statutory leave. Now, there's a specific definition of what statutory leave means in relation to the Employment Rights Act, but we're talking about maternity leave and other family-related leave there generally. The other circumstances where your worker is unable to take some or all of their leave as a result of being unwell, so taking a period of sick leave. Now, the regulations will say the carried over leave must be taken within 18 months of the leave year to which it relates. So again, without going too far down a technical rabbit hole, you've got an 18-month window in which to take that carried over leave where you've previously been prevented by sickness from taking it. And then the next one is a little bit more interesting. There's a right to carry over in it where in any leave year, the employer fails to recognise a worker's right to annual leave or paid annual leave. Now, you might think, well, you know, how's that going to apply? Well, this is very squarely referencing the mislabeling of the employment relationship. So imagine a scenario where you've got a contractor in your business who's been there for 4 or 5 years. You look to end that contractor relationship, at which point contractor sticks their hand up and says, oh, do you know what? I think actually I was an employee of yours, so I'd like my redundancy pay, please. I'd like my notice pay. And by the way, I haven't had any holiday pay for the last 4 or 5 years, so I'd like a big chunk of cash for that. That happens. We've both litigated cases where that has happened, and holiday pay often, you know, forms quite a big chunk of the compensation that's been sought in those circumstances. If you get the label wrong in terms of that relationship, and they should have actually been categorized as an employee or as a worker, even with a right to leave, you have failed to recognize their right to annual leave or paid annual leave. So you've got a liability there. So these regulations seek to address the carryover in relation to that. I think we're a bit uncertain, aren't we, Adrian, about how that dovetails with kind of backdated liability and everything. Mm. Or at least I was uncertain about it.
Yeah, I was uncertain how that dovetails because there's, as you know, the government brought in a limit on back pay to limit it to 2 years. So we're kind of uncertain how this is going to sit alongside that. But I think there's every chance that that 2 year backstop is probably going to be withdrawn by whoever comes into power next.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but again, it's just another area of messiness. And I think the point to note on this one as well is that even if it's not the end of a contractual relationship, but they are continuing to work for you, you have that ongoing liability. If while they're working for you, they say, "I'm a worker, I'm an employee," and you say, "No, you're not," you have an ongoing liability in respect of the leave, and it can only be put right the minute that you turn around and go, okay, then yes, we accept that you're now a worker. Mm-hmm. That then would start to mark the start of a leave year, and they can take their holiday during that leave year. But if once you've accepted liability for it, they then only have one leave year in which to do it.
Yeah.
All right. So it's a liability that can be limited if you hold your hands up and say, okay, fine, we'll get it right now. But the carryover will continue until you start to get it right, basically.
Yeah, it's like there's a crystallization and then that's kind of limiting.
And it starts the clock running. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, in reality, I think, Peter, you're right. Most of the time, these issues don't actually arise until the contract ends.
Yeah,
because most of the time the contractor is quite happy sitting on their contract. And it's only when it comes to an end that they decide that they're unhappy.
You're so cynical. I was going to say that
there's
no problem until there's a problem, right? And then there is.
Yeah.
So the other two elements to this, which are quite interesting, are if you fail to give your worker a reasonable opportunity to take leave or encourage them to do so, and if you inform the worker that leave not taken by the end of the year will be lost if you don't tell them about that. So obviously you need to start thinking about messaging and what policies say and maybe just some slight tweaking for that. So if you fail to do those three things, so recognize their rights to it, give them a chance to take the leave, encourage them to take the leave, tell them if they don't take it, they lose it, then the right to carry over leave lasts until the end of the first full leave year in which there hasn't been a failure by you. So it kind of like rolls together and carries on. Now, again, and I hate coming back to this distinction between the 4 weeks leave and the 1.6 weeks leave, but these carryover rights apply to the 4 weeks leave, but not to the 1.6 weeks leave. So to the main bulk of leave, the 4 weeks, but not the working time regs part of it. So again, there's a distinction maintained still, which, you know, it's maybe an overlooked opportunity to try and simplify things. There is one important exception to that, though, and that is the right to carry over in situations of family-related leave, so think maternity leave. That applies to both your Reg 13 and Reg 13A holiday, so to the entire 5.6 weeks of leave, not just to the first 4 weeks of that. It applies to all of it. Okay, appreciate that's kind of super technical. For the irregular hours and part-year workers that we talked about before, these carry over rights apply to all of their new Regulation 15B holiday. So remember that point about irregular hours and part-year workers, their holiday entitlements no longer derive from 13 and 13A. They get a new regulation provision to look at, which is Reg 15B. Lastly on this, there's also a provision that the worker and employer can agree in a relevant agreement to carry over part of the Regulation 15B holiday to the next leave year. So relevant agreement, I mean, normally when that term is used in working time regs, we're talking about an employment contract or standalone holiday policy or something that's buried in an employee handbook, but something that basically reflects an agreement between employer and employee. So let's just have a look. So they're kind of the headline main ones that we're concerned with, and appreciate there's quite a bit to think about there. What about the potential pitfalls in relation to all of this, Adrienne?
Well, I've already talked about how you label an irregular hours worker. You know, what's that going to be? I mean, that's just absolutely ripe for litigation. But for example, if you categorise somebody as an irregular hours worker and you choose to pay them rolled up holiday pay, and it then turns out that actually they're not an irregular hours worker, then technically they can have a claim to say that they haven't actually been paid or given annual leave properly under the regs. I mean, that is a really technical point. And in reality, probably most people are going to be quite happy as long as they are getting properly calculated holiday pay. Then you've obviously got the employment status. We've already covered that. Getting the employment status wrong is fraught with difficulty. But to be honest, it always has been. And that doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. No. So that's just a continuation of another chestnut that just carries on. I think one of the things that I was disappointed about is that there's been no definition of what counts as long-term sick. This is a question that we get asked all the time. So that bit where, you know, the employee says at the end of the year, I've not been able to take my holiday because I've been sick and I want to carry it all over. You know, what is long-term sick? There is no definition. So you could actually have somebody who, and forgive me for being cynical again, I know Peter, you're going to tell me I'm cynical, but somebody who, say, request holiday in December, it's rejected because it's busy, other people have booked time off, and they then go sick for the whole of December. So they're off for the whole of the month. They then get to the end of the year and say, oops, sorry, not being able to take my holiday, and I therefore have the right to carry it over. So that's a potential issue. Now, you can put into your policies, you can try and set out what you consider to be long-term sick. As somebody, I've seen it done where it's 4 weeks or more, four consecutive weeks, and that counts as long-term sick. So how would we avoid that scenario that I've just mentioned? Well, comes back round to the point about notifying employees to take holiday. So I would argue that if, as an employer during the year, you have said at regular intervals, maybe once a quarter, oh, don't forget to take your holiday, it's really important you take breaks during the year, don't leave it till the end of the year, you've made that reminder. With this employee who's been off in December, you then go back and say, technically, you don't fit into the definition of somebody who has been unable to take their leave before the end of the year. Because in actual fact, you've had 11 out of 12 months of the year in which you've had the opportunity to take that holiday. So no, we're not going to let you carry it over. But just in the description I've just given you there, you can see that that's absolutely ripe for dispute and people falling out. But you know, reminding people through the year is probably a good idea and good practice. And now we've got it in these regs, it becomes even more so.
Yeah, it's like a codification of what's sensible, isn't it?
Yeah. So the other thing that's also irritating, and I know it's going to be irritating to a lot of people listening, is for those people who are not the irregular hours workers, but have, you know, are in the traditional holiday calculation, the methodology of having to work out what is their week's pay is still where we're at, which is the calculation over 52 weeks, disregarding any weeks where there was no pay, or they were on statutory leave, or they were on sick pay, in which case then you can go back up to a maximum of 104 weeks in order to average out what their weekly pay is. That's still there for the non-irregular hours workers. And I know from speaking to many clients that that is a right headache. So, you know, it's a question of whether your systems can make those calculations, because it's not easy.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. We're almost at the end. What we're going to do is just have a look at just some of the takeaway points and things for you to go away and be thinking about. And before we do that, if you found this session useful today, please check out our podcast. We're on Spotify or on Amazon Music as well. I think we've got about 35 back episodes now, so recordings of these sessions. Most recently, we've looked at what a new government might mean for employment law. So obviously, we're going to have a general election in 2024 in the UK. Opinion polls suggest change of colour of government. And we've been hearing from the political parties on what their proposals are for the first 100 days of office if that change happens. So if you're interested in other change aside from holiday pay that might be happening in 2024, then have a look on Spotify. You just need to search for Employment Law 101. In terms of this topic and holiday pay, the things that you need to be thinking about in the next 4 or 5 weeks, less any time that you're spending celebrating Christmas, what do you need to be doing? Well, really, I think you need to start auditing what arrangements you've got in place at the moment. So looking at things like, how many regular employees do we have? How many irregular workers do we have? How many part-year workers do we have? So just a basic kind of audit of categories of worker. Do you have any consultants, actually, contractors, anybody where you might be on dicey ground in terms of worker status? So do you need to revisit those things? Next, how are you paying people? Do you pay overtime? Do you pay commission? Are you paying any allowances? You know, what's in place? So what different categories of pay do you have? And that leads on to how those payments are being factored into holiday pay, and are you doing things correctly, basically? Are you going to be paying different types of holiday differently? So again, talking here about the 4 weeks versus the 1.6 weeks, we've obviously commented to say a much easier approach, even if it risks overpayment and you can afford it, is just to pay the 5.6 weeks all at the same rate of pay, or factoring in the same payments, because it's administratively easier. But you do have to balance that against cost, because it may be prohibitively expensive. But you need to have an understanding and make an active decision about what you're going to do there. If you are going to differentiate, how are you going to determine which types of holidays are which? So when someone's taking holiday, how are you going to decide whether you're classing them as taking part of the first 4 weeks, or are they into their 1.6 weeks? What about rolled up holiday pay? You know, some of you may be thinking, actually, it's an opportunity for us to start using it because it will make things administratively easier. Perhaps you haven't done it before because you've wanted to be super legally compliant, ticking the box for you. And, you know, this codification gives you the green light to look at that approach now, so you don't carry the legal risk that you maybe carried previously. So it is an opportunity to start using rolled up holiday pay. And make things a little bit easier. If you are going to do that, when's it going to start? And what's your employee communication strategy going to be around it? So how are you going to engage with your workforce and explain what's changing and why? What documents do you need to reflect those changes as well? What about accruing holiday during sick leave and during maternity leave? Is that going to be compliant? And if not, what do you need to change to make it so? And finally, on these points we were just discussing about in relation to carryover, how are you going to remind workers to use up holiday entitlement and give them sufficient opportunity to do so, so you avoid them having to carry lots over? And that could be, you know, a bit of a problematic area, couldn't it, Adrian? I think in terms of getting towards year ends and the like.
Yeah, I think it's why it's really useful to remember the health and safety point. You know, you have, aside from all of this kerfuffle over holiday entitlement and pay, It is. It's your obligation to make sure that you're looking after the well-being of your staff. So if you have somebody, I saw somebody recently who hadn't taken a holiday in what seemed to be 18 months, and they had an enormous amount of holiday pay owing to them. That's not looking after your staff's health and welfare, and it's potentially leading to personal injury claims and all kinds of other things. I mean, the working time is monitored by the Health and Safety Executive, who I think I said in the past, but they're probably much more, you know, a lot busier on looking after accidents and stuff like that. But, you know, if you are at a site where there is an accident and, you know, they do come in and have a look, they might want to see what proactive steps you've been taking to make sure that your staff do take holiday. So I think it's a good thing to do. And yeah, we would recommend that you do it regularly.
Mm. Just very quickly before we finish, just had a few questions in. Are the holiday carryover rules applicable to normal full-time employees and part-timers, or just the regular hours? Now, the carryover rules apply to everybody, but don't forget there is a distinction on the paper, at least, in treatment between regular workers and their 4 weeks leave versus their 1.6 weeks leave. But as with all these questions, if anyone's got any follow-up questions, just get in touch with us. Is it lawful to specify a shorter period of time to use up leave, such as 6 months? No, I don't think so. The regulations say that you have a window of you know, whatever the specified time frame is to use it, and that's what an employee is going to point to and say, that's my legal entitlement, thank you very much. And the 52-week look-back period, is it regardless of time scale, i.e. over a 24-month period if days or weeks are missed? Yeah, I think you can look back further, can't you, Adrienne?
Well, in certain circumstances. So when you're trying to average out holiday pay for normal workers, yes, you look back over 104 weeks, discounting any weeks when they've been on leave. For the rolled-up holiday pay people, it's 52, averaging out their pay is 52 weeks. You can only discount weeks when they're not working, if they're not working because they're sick or on statutory leave. So if they are just not working because they're 0 hours, and in some weeks you've not given them any work, those weeks will still count towards the 52 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's going to be it from us today. If you've got any follow-up questions, just feel free to reach out, get in touch on LinkedIn. We're pretty active on there, or just drop us an email. Look for us at npmlegal.co.uk. What I will say is that obviously we're going to be keeping a watching brief very much on these regulations. So we will be updating. We'll send some updates out, probably stick something on LinkedIn. If you have any feedback for us in the meantime, we'd absolutely love to hear from you. But otherwise, just enjoy the rest of your week and the weekend once it arrives, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time for the next Employment Law 101 session. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.